Good morning. Welcome to the KUNM Call-In Show. I'm Ed Williams. New Mexico's population is aging fast. And with a high poverty rate, problems with Medicaid, and potential cuts to health care on the horizon, this state's senior citizens are facing a number of challenges. What do you think needs to be done to make sure older New Mexicans get the support they need? Are you a caregiver, a health worker, a retiree? Do you get health coverage from Medicare? We want to hear from you. The number to call is 877-899-5866. You can join the conversation on Twitter as well, where we're live tweeting the program. Our handle there is at KUNM News, or you can email comments to callinshow@kunm.org. Joining us in the studio today are Gene Varela, director of the New Mexico chapter of the American Association of Retired People, or AARP, Ellen Leitzer, executive director of the Senior Citizens Law Office, Barbara Weber is director of Health Action New Mexico, and James Clark, political strategist for the Republican Party of New Mexico. Welcome.
Good morning.
Thank you.
Good morning.
So we hear a lot about New Mexico's aging population, but Gene, maybe for starters, can you paint a picture for us of what that really means?
Well, I think that, and this has been for some time, but New Mexico is one of the top five fastest in the growth of the 60-plus population in the nation. And it's, you know, for example, it's projected that by 2030, New Mexico will rank third in the nation in the percentage of the population 60-plus. And so, you know, we're just that percentage keeps going up. It's because of the aging of the baby boomers. It's also because of the number of people that come to New Mexico to retire. So we keep continuing to have that flow of people that come in. I think on the opposite side of the economy, when young people can't find jobs, they go out of state to find jobs and then come back when they retire. So our state just continues to grow in that aging population. But even more significant, I think, is the 85-plus population, which will more than triple from 2000 to 2030. And so you're talking about people who have higher, I mean, they're more active just because of changing lifestyles, but they're also needing more care, more support services, more help in living independently in the state. And then the other piece is that 15% of the 60-plus live at or below the poverty level. 17% live at 125% of the federal poverty level. So the dependence on supports, again, for health care, for living, for other things are there because many of them live on just Social Security or very low Social Security.
So I guess this isn't a place like, say, South Florida where you have, you know, some wealthy retirees moving. Maybe there's some of that, but mostly, I mean, we're a state that's had longstanding problems with poverty, and a lot of those people are just getting older now.
Yeah, and then you've got the rural nature of the state. So you've got many people who are in the older age groups living in very remote parts of the state needing access to resources and help.
Hmm. What kind of resources and help are they needing?
Well, I think that, and you know, maybe some of the others can jump in too, but you need access to health care. You need access to support, access to food, access to medicine, access to just the things you need to live on a daily basis.
But, I mean, is there adequate access to those things? New Mexico does have a pretty robust healthcare system in some ways, right? I mean, it's the second biggest driver of the economy. So is our healthcare system keeping up with the needs of this aging population that we're having in our state?
I think one of the things that's scary about that 2030 marker that we're talking about, we have more people that are going to be 65 than under 18 in 2030. So when we're looking at what's going to be able to fuel that, what's going to be able to fund that education, or excuse me, that healthcare system, it's going to be completely underfunded because so many people are leaving, so many jobs are leaving, and the money going in isn't going to be proportional to the money going out because we have such a floundering economy.
But have we kept up with the increasing demands of, you know, aging New Mexicans as they need more health care as they get older?
Well, I'd like to jump in here. This
Go ahead,
is
Ellen.
Right now, Medicaid is an entitlement, which means that if you meet the medically necessary criteria and the income, so the health care and the income and asset requirements, you're entitled to it. What the fear is that there is talk in Congress about block granting Medicaid to the states. Right now, as long as you're entitled to it, you get the benefit, and the federal government pays $3 out of every $1 spent by the state, we get reimbursed by the federal government. So it's a 3-to-1 match. And if Medicaid is block granted under every model that's being considered at the national level, states will suffer. They will get a set amount of money from the federal government to spend on Medicaid for New Mexico's population, and it is not going to be enough.
Well, let's get to that in a little bit, but back up for a minute. I mean, where do older people here in New Mexico get their health care? Is a large population of the older residents of the state getting Medicaid, Medicare? Can you break that down for us? I mean, how does this look?
This is Barbara. One statistic that I think really illuminates this is that 50% of the people across the nation and in New Mexico, 50 and over, are on Medicaid. So the impact to serious cuts, they talk about up to 35% cuts in Medicaid, would be disastrous for older adults because we are the people who are that are on the Medicaid. So, and Medicaid in New Mexico has really, with Centennial Care, has really jumped on the wagon to do the long-term care services that keep people at home.
And Centennial Care is the state Medicaid program.
It's the state Medicaid program, and the long-term care services are community-based support services. So rather than people who otherwise might have to go to institutional facilities are able to be kept at home. Now, that program would take serious hits if you're starting to look at where you have to make cuts. But we've made good advances in New Mexico in that program. Not that it's where it needs to be, but it's a lifeline for so many of our people.
Okay, but Medicaid is an income-based program, and Medicare is an age-based program, and this gets pretty obscure pretty quick. Yeah. I mean, can we simplify for an older New Mexican, a typical older New Mexican, how these two programs work in conjunction?
Well, I think that, keep in mind that I think it's like 95% of people 65 plus in New Mexico are on Medicare. So Medicare for the 65 plus population is your core health care system. That Medicaid for those that are low income supplements that and helps the lower income individuals with the premiums and with areas that the Medicare doesn't cover. And so it helps in that. And then for the people under age 65, now you're dealing with the open market. And so for those individuals that are low income, Medicaid becomes the primary source of health care for these people under the age of 65. As you know, as Barbara indicated, New Mexico has done a lot. I mean, Medicaid, we took the expansion program. We'd been number one in the state in the percentage of the amount of funds used by Medicaid for in-home support services. I think we've kind of slipped just a small amount to about third in the latest information, but we're at the top in the nation. And so, you know, because of that, and we talked about the rural nature of the state, and I know Ellen's going to talk more about long-term care facilities. There are not enough long-term care beds to have for everybody that's 85 plus or 65 plus in the state. So there is a need to support people in their homes. And New Mexico has made great strides in this.
Long-term care just means like a nursing home?
Long-term care, the broader definition is what helps an individual stay independent and be able to have a life that allows you to be comfortable as you age. So it could be in a facility if that's the appropriate care. If that, you know, you need the supports and the health supports and you don't have other resources, and that helps you. But then it also means in-home care, like homemaker services, home health services, visiting nurses, all of these kinds of supports that allow people to remain, as well as transportation and meals and all the support, social support pieces that also help people stay independent.
Well, if you're of retirement age, if you're in long-term care, if you're caring for someone who's aging, we want to hear from you today. The number to call is 877-899-5866. Let us know what your experience has been, what's working, what's not, where we should be looking in terms of changing policy. And Ellen, I know that you work a lot in nursing homes. We're talking about long-term care. Tell us about some of the people that you work with and what their experience is with getting health care here.
Okay. Well, let me just start by stating that there are 74 nursing homes statewide in New Mexico. The total population of those nursing homes is 5,728 individuals. The average age is 77.4. 65.5% of those people are Medicaid dependent. The average monthly cost of nursing home care this year is approximately $7,500 a month, we're talking. So most New Mexicans cannot afford the cost of nursing home care. Medicare pays for a very, very, very small share of nursing home care. It only pays skilled care up to 100 days. And there are stiff copays from day 21 to day 100. So the program that our most frail, our most vulnerable seniors are dependent on is Medicaid in order for them to get the care that they need. And many of our clients are in nursing homes. Now, there's several thousand more receiving community-based care. They would be in a nursing home, but for this program, again, they meet a 24/7 level of nursing home care, but they have some supports in their home, so they're able to remain in their homes or in assisted living, which are typically less institutionalized than nursing facilities. So the population in nursing homes, and we deal with these folks on a daily basis, are most frail, are most vulnerable. And in fact, 70% of them are chair-bound, which means they can't walk. They're not, they can't ambulate. So if Medicaid funds were cut, I mean, that is the scariest scenario to me, is what is going to happen to all of these, you know, 5,700 individuals? Where are they going to go? Who's going to take care of them? Many of them are socially isolated. They've either alienated family members or, because many have behavioral disorders, or their friends, their families are deceased. So there is no one to take care of them. And our office, in the past, we've actually initiated statewide class action litigation to help people become eligible for Medicaid services and expand Medicaid in New Mexico eligibility. But again, it's our frailest population. The dementia, 42.7% of those individuals have dementia. So they're not really able to care for themselves at all. And if Medicaid is cut, if Medicaid is then block granted, I don't know what we're going to do with this huge population.
This is Barbara. In addition, I'd like to say that in addition to the nursing homes, we have so many people who are, first of all, disabled and are able to be cared for in their home. There's another, if you want to call them frail, but I think we've done a good job of trying to keep them as independent and part of the community as possible. But the other part of Medicaid is that if you do these drastic cuts to Medicaid as being proposed currently, then rural infrastructure is going to crumble for health care. So you're maybe in a nursing home, but you're not going to be able to send that person that just had a heart attack to a local hospital easily, because that hospital is going to go away. So I think a lot of, for not only older adults, but for everyone, we're going to see already a, I wouldn't call it frail, but not a robust system to begin with for rural health care is going to simply disappear.
Do we really know that? We haven't been in this position before, so how can we say for certain what's going to happen if the system that we've been working with changes?
I think if you talk to any of your rural hospital administrators, they'll tell you that they're on the brink as it is, but if you start cutting them, then they have no choice but to not be able to operate. Many of them are for profit, so that's not going to happen. As your counties are going to be impacted, your county hospitals, your county nursing homes will be devastated in terms of services. So, you know, it doesn't take a lot to just take the dollars and cents and subtract them out and see that we can't maintain that kind of a structure with this kind of 35% cuts. Medicaid really sustains rural New Mexico in terms of its infrastructure for health care.
We're talking about the health challenges facing older New Mexicans and what potential changes to Medicare and Medicaid could mean for our state's aging population. In the studio with us are Gene Varela of the AARP, Ellen Leitzer of the Senior Citizens Law Office, Barbara Weber of Health Action New Mexico, and James Clark of the Republican Party of New Mexico. We are going to take a short break here, and then we'll be right back in a minute.
The law firm of Rothstein Donatelli is committed to supporting KUNM. Since 1976, the firm has litigated Native American law, criminal defense, wrongful death, and civil rights in New Mexico and nationwide. Info at rothsteinlaw.com.
Support comes from Lieber's Luggage, offering everything but the trip, and SunTours, traveling the world with group tours departing from Albuquerque. Lieber's Luggage and SunTours, everything travel for 39 years, locally owned and operated.
Nakota Cree singer Lisa Muswagen was given the gift of the hand drum by her father when she was young. Today, she's using it as a tool to share story. Here's some of her debut album, Buffalo and Rabbits. We'll explore more of her music on the next Native America Calling.
Weekday mornings at 11 on KUNM.
This is KUNM 89.9, broadcasting from the University of New Mexico. Are you over 50 and covered by Medicaid or Medicare? How's the healthcare system in New Mexico working for you, and where does it need to change? Or do you care for an older family member or friend? Call us now. The number is 877-899-5866. Now, Senator Mitch McConnell has said he'll have a new health care bill out today. And if that bill looks anything like the House bill or the earlier Senate bill, it's going to include changes to Medicaid. I mean, James Clark, your political strategy director at the Republican Party of New Mexico, I haven't seen anything from the state GOP about where they stand on this bill. What's the position that the state Republicans are taking?
Well, of course, we want to see the final bill before we talk about the benefits of it as opposed to the ACA, the AHCA compared to the ACA. But one of the things that I know we're looking forward to, and we've kind of danced around these in the discussion so far, the Senate bill as it stood just a few days ago actually increased Medicaid spending in 2026 to $446 billion, which is a 26% increase compared to last year's spending levels. So I would be terrified if we significantly cut Medicaid spending, but that's not what's going to happen in this bill. You were talking about how you're worried about cuts to rural hospitals, and the last version of the Senate bill that was proposed increased the funding for rural hospitals. It focuses on, specifically in those rural hospitals, it focuses on assisting patients with low income and special needs. So when we're looking at this kind of dire situation that we're in now compared to the possibility of fixing that with the AHCA, I'm a lot happier with the potential of fixing that, because we're looking at 97% premium increases under the ACA as it stands, and that's not going to happen under the AHCA. So we're very excited about the AHCA and the potential fixes that it's going to have for New Mexico's aging population.
Yeah, but you can give money to the hospitals, but if the patients are losing their Medicaid coverage, how is that going to work?
I don't see that patients are losing their Medicaid coverage when we have a 26% increase compared to 2016 levels.
But I have to say that the COB, when the Congressional Budget Office looked at it, they saw over time, and that over time is the 10 years, which will put us right at the silver tsunami really hitting New Mexico. That's when you're going to really see the cuts, especially for Medicaid, over time, and especially if you transfer either through per capita or block grants or whatever modality you choose, then this is going to really impact the state's ability. And New Mexico is probably in the least capable position of supplementing the funds that it would anticipate that you would have to do if you're going to keep up the level of services. And I have to say, when you start, when I go around to the senior centers for various parts of our work, and already there are still gaps in our service that are pretty critical to older people. The first thing we hear about is that they can't get vision coverage, oral health is not in included in Medicare. The new state of New Mexico, with expanded adults, included oral health as part of its benefit. It's now on the chopping block to take that away because the state has funding issues. There's no vision, no oral health, and no hearing covers and the coverage. And those are major blocks for people. I was talking to a gentleman several months ago, and he said, where can I get – he was up in Rio Arriba, and he said, where can I get vision assistance? I don't have any extra money in my account, but I can't drive. I can't pass the driver's test because my glasses are too old. And without this, I can't function. I can't move. I can't get to my doctors. I can't see my family. So these are real issues for people that that we have to do better by. So I think the challenge is not only to figure out how we're going to fund all this, but to look at how we're going to supplement critical services for older adults as they age.
877-899-5866 is the number to call to join the conversation. I'm sorry, did I cut you off, Jim?
Yeah, I was just going to say I agree with you that these are issues that need to be addressed. Vision care, all these extra types of coverage for our elderly population. Mm-hmm. However, that's all problems that are going on in the status quo. These are all problems that we're living with today under the ACA, and that's why Senate Republicans are trying to fix that with the AHCA by increasing spending 26% in 2026.
Well, fixing the ACA was really not about Medicaid. Medicaid expansion is part of that, but Medicaid operated separately. So really there was a shift in the GOP bill to really start looking at cutting Medicaid, which they deemed to be unsustainable. But that was not really what was originally thought about when they talked about repeal and replace, because the ACA is not Medicaid, basically.
I guess I just don't see a 26% increase in spending as a cut.
And I think as we've been, AARP has been very involved at the national level on the review of the bill, as well as challenging and fighting against some of the changes. And I think the issue isn't the increase in the funding; it's the structure of the financing. That's what causes the challenges for a state like New Mexico, because I mean, we're right now struggling with the whole issue of how do we pay for Medicaid and the demands on Medicaid right today. And we're already to hearings tomorrow on premium supports and asking
copays.
People to pay copays. We're looking at they've already gone back and changed some of the payment structure for some of the facilities and some of the providers. They're looking at options for reducing benefits just to meet the current level. If we come into a capped or a per capita structure of funding, then the burden falls on the state to provide the funding at a time when we don't have the resources. So it's one of, yes, there may be more money available nationwide, but is the money going to be available to the state? And if it isn't, and we have the demand and the need and the required services we have to provide, then the burden falls on the state. And so the reason we talk long-term care, those are optional services. So when we talk about providing care in a home as opposed to in a nursing home, that's an optional service. So when you look at cutbacks and reducing services, you're going to go first to your optional services. And that's our concern when you look at the data I presented at the beginning. The number of, we have, I think I was looking at a number, the number of sick 85 plus in the state in 2020, or right now it's 2000 it was 23,000 people. It's projected to be 75,000 in 2030, and there are only 6,000 beds in the state. A high percentage of that number needs in-home care services. So it's the issue of structure and how you get the money out to the states, and that's where we see the impact is going to be.
Right. Well, let's go to the phones. We have a caller from Albuquerque. Scott is on the line with us. Hi, Scott.
All the problems that we're having with funding health care in this country stem back to low taxes. We need to raise taxes on the wealthiest people so we can pay for the health care system that we want.
I didn't understand what you were saying. Can you start all over with that thought, Scott?
Okay. The Republican Party is trying to roll back taxes on the wealthiest people in the country, and they're shrouding it in this guise of fixing the health care system. But what they're doing is just giving a tax break to the wealthiest people in this country. All the problems that New Mexico and the country faces with our health care system stem from a lack of money. Where do we get money to provide services in this country? Through taxes. We need to raise taxes on the wealthiest people to pay for the healthcare system that we need. Simple.
Thanks for that. Thanks for that comment, Scott. I mean, James, you probably hear this a lot. I mean, there is a feeling out there that this is just a tax break for wealthy people and that it's going to come at the expense of low-income people needing health care. What's your response to that?
You are correct that the Republican Party does want to lower taxes for all people in the United States and in New Mexico. So I'm not going to argue with you at all, Scott, that we're trying to lower taxes. However, when we're looking at the healthcare system, we're looking at a system where the best way for you to get insurance is through your employer if you're young. So we're trying to make sure that those 18 to 65 to 64 are getting insured through their employer. So that way we don't have to burden these systems and we can increase the amount of coverage that the 65 plus population receives. So when we're doing tax cuts for all Americans, we're making sure that we're strengthening the economy so that you can get more health care through your employer. And then we're able to give more long-term and elderly care.
Does that work in a state like New Mexico where the employment situation is basically flat and people a lot of times have trouble finding a job?
You know, it sure doesn't because our economy is terrible. We need to have stronger business regulations. We need to have a more business-friendly environment in New Mexico so that we can attract those younger workers into New Mexico. The reason that New Mexico has a problem with this is that we have this brain drain. We have so many young people leaving New Mexico. So we're experiencing a system where the people taking services out of Medicaid, Medicare are increasing and they're not paying back into that service because they're not working. And we're not funding that service because we don't have anyone in the working pool. So the way to fix this is to rebuild the economy.
We have a Twitter comment from Dan who says he's not yet retired, but retirees under age 64 will pay five times the lowest cost plan. Obamacare's cost is three times, and he says this is not good for the older demographic, referring to, I guess, the previous bill to come out of the Senate. And Gene, I know you've talked a lot about concerns that AARP has about increasing this the disparity. Can you describe the difference that people can charge young and old people?
Yeah, prior to ACA, insurance companies had, you know, what they looked at was the market. Who pays, where they have to pay out the most money? Who are the enrollees in their plans that they're going to have to put out funds? So they looked at the age and they said, okay, most likely 65 plus population are going to be the higher ones, are going to take the most of the cost. So they had almost uncontrolled ability to set premiums based on age and could charge older populations a higher premium. The ACA reduced that and said, look, you know, we're going to provide some other options. We're going to do expansion. We're going to, you know, Medicaid expansion. We're going to do all these other opportunities for people to get insurance. So let's now limit the age rating difference from 3 to 1. So someone especially, and it affects probably more of your 50 to 64 population, less of the 65 plus because they're primarily in Medicare, but the 50 to 64 population can be charged, cannot be charged more than three times as much as the younger population for the same premium. Under the proposals that have been coming out both in the House and the Senate, they basically raise that to 5 to 1, which means that people now who are in that 50 to 64 age group are going to be faced with much higher premiums in the state. And I know that I was looking at some estimates here. In 2020, 60-year-olds in New Mexico earning $20,000 annually could pay up to $3,320 more a year in premiums and $4,549 more a year in deductibles, coinsurance, and copayments. So that it seems like a real subtle change, but it basically, once again, switches the burden of the cost of insurance to that 50 to 64 age group.
Are people in that age group generally able to make that cost difference up? I mean, if you're older and all of a sudden have to pay more for your coverage, you know, this isn't a rich state. Can people handle that?
Well, I think that's where you look, again, you look back at the economy of the state and you don't, employers, because we're in an economy that has small employers, most employers can't offer us a health insurance benefit. So people have to go out and get it on their own. And so it is going to fall on the individuals to bear the cost, the change in the premiums because of that change in age rating. And I know we term it as a tax because there's nothing else that's going on. You pass the law, and now I may have to pay X amount more on a premium, and I have no control over that.
I think there are several other – this is Barbara. I think there are several other sectors that also affect this. One would be pre-existing conditions, which mm-hmm. before the ACA was huge for people not being able to get coverage or not to be giving coverage for issues they were. The other is that to take away the – as this law suggests, taking away the lifetime maximum, again, is huge for people because if you happen to have a catastrophic illness or sometimes just – today, with biologics and expensive drugs being $4,000 a month, just the cost of medication can be a real issue. And once you get into the lifetime benefits, the other is the preserving the minimum benefits that was offered under the ACA, and the ones that are most likely to go away if we give that option to the states. Would be mental health benefits, would be, and that's huge for New Mexico given our opioid crisis and substance abuse crisis, and the other optional benefits are maternity and drug coverage.
If you're receiving those benefits or needing to pay for your medications, give us a call, 877-899-5866, and tell us about it. We have a lot of phone calls to get to, so let's go now to Sarah, who's calling from Albuquerque. Hi, Sarah.
Yes, I just want to say I am on Medicaid and I am on SSI disability. And, you know, President Trump cut how many millions, like $100 million on Medicaid, I don't know. And then he increased our war budget by $50 billion. But, you know, I am constantly being scapegoated. You know, I'm the scourge of society because I'm on, I get $735. That I'm a waste of our tax dollars. And, you know, our war spending is taking up 50% of our federal taxes. People are paying war tax. And, you know, people are going without health care. That's where the cuts have been made. So it's all about the means for all the poor people to be beating each other up and fighting each other, and that's the way they like it.
Well, thanks for that, Sarah. I appreciate it. We have another call on the line with a similar thought, I think, calling from Albuquerque, Liz.
Hi, Liz. Hi. I had a couple of comments. First, I wanted to counter what the gentleman from the Republican Party said about people on Medicaid not working. One of the primary purposes of the Affordable Care Act was to make it possible for the working poor to have health care, because prior to the ACA, the working poor could not afford health care. So many people on Medicaid do work. The other point I wanted to make is that it's my understanding that the increase in Medicaid funding that gentleman is talking about will not be enough to cover the increase in the cost of health care. So ultimately, there will be cuts in the amount of money available to spend on. So the saying that there's going to be an increase in absolute dollars is disingenuous. That increase is ultimately not going to be enough to cover the cost of the increase in health care.
Thanks, Liz. James, can you clarify that increase that you're talking about? What you said, 26%?
Yeah.
And that was last year?
Compared to last year's spending, yeah, we're going to see a 26% increase by 2026. And to her first point, yes, if that's how that came across, I apologize. I was talking about retired populations, and so I wasn't, you know, meaning to insinuate that those Medicaid recipients aren't working. However, when we're talking about the increase in cost, the increase in the amount that that's going to need to be paid out. That's probably true under the status quo, that we're going to need to have a whole bunch more Medicaid dollars being spent to take care of all of our citizens if all of our citizens are on Medicaid. The point of this bill is to make it more affordable for people to have other options. There are those who need Medicaid. There are those who need Medicare. But the system as it stands, we're looking at the Obamacare has had a 97% increase in New Mexico. The Senate bill would lower premiums across the nation by 30%. So the point of this bill is to make it possible for people to get health care outside of those government subsidies.
But every report that you read says millions and millions of people are going to have trouble getting that health care. So I guess I don't I'm having trouble reconciling what you're saying with all the studies I've read.
The issue at hand is that that's the case either way. And the issue at hand is that those studies assume the same is going to be true under the ACA as opposed to under the AHCA. The point of the AHCA is to allow people to get cheaper health care themselves and through their employer. And that's not something that these studies are taking into account.
Let me stop you there, Barbara, because we're up against a break. But we'll be back in 1 minute. You're listening to the KUNM Call-In Show live from the University of New Mexico. We're talking about New Mexico's aging population, challenges for health care older folks are facing, and changes to Medicare and Medicaid that could be on the horizon as Republicans in Congress work to repeal and replace Obamacare. We want to hear from you. Is repealing the Affordable Care Act a good thing for New Mexico seniors? How can we make sure our growing population of older New Mexicans get the care they need? The number to call is 877-899-5866. You can also send an email to callinshow@kunm.org or tweet at KUNM News. We'll be right back.
People have lived in what is now Albuquerque for over 10,000 years. This Saturday, on the Children's Hour, the KUNM Kids will be joined by anthropologist Dr. Matt Schmader, an expert in the ancient people of the Middle Rio Grande Valley. The Children's Hour, Saturdays, 9 to 10 a.m., right here on KUNM.
When pianist Emmanuel Ax plays a concert, he likes to keep it simple.
I'm just trying to get on the stage without tripping and trying to get through the piece without being too scared.
Coming up, Emmanuel Ax makes it to the piano and gives a thrilling performance of Beethoven's Emperor Concerto on the next Performance Today from APM.
Weekday mornings at 9 on KUNM.
This is the KUNM Call-In Show. I'm Ed Williams, reporter for Public Health New Mexico, a KUNM reporting project providing in-depth investigative coverage of public health and the impacts of poverty in our state. 877-899-5866 is the number to call to join the conversation. You can also send us an email at callinshow@kunm.org. And Barbara of Weber of Health Action New Mexico, you were just about to say something before the break.
Actually, I was.
Oh, Ellen, I'm sorry. I have my peripheral vision.
It's all right. We're talking about employment-related insurance. Well, the reality is a lot of large employers in New Mexico do not provide health insurance. And one of the ways they avoid it is by hiring people for less than full-time work. And if you work less than 30 hours a week, you're not entitled to health care coverage. So there are many employers in this state, and I wish I had statistics. I don't. On hand, maybe one of the callers could jump in here. But you see people who are employed, the working poor, as Liz mentioned, as Barbara mentioned, that cannot now under the ACA, they're finally able to afford health care, and they have subsidized premiums through Centennial Care, through Medicaid. And if that goes away, that's a huge population that's working that's not going to be able to afford health care. And their employers do not have the incentive or the desire to cover them.
We have a call from Albuquerque. Michael is on the line. Hi, Michael.
Good morning. Interesting discussion. I'm Michael, and I'm just your average savage. The Indian people have been here in the Americas for 10 to 20,000 years. I think that in a so-called Christian nation, it really is a moral issue. And I don't know why There are those who are committed to throwing people to the lions in a Romanistic fashion. It's totally contrary to any sort of Christian teaching. And it was the Christians who came here, said they would not, thou shalt not steal, thou shalt not kill. Well, we know what happened there. We know the story. It appears now that everyone is being treated in the same manner. I think the bottom line is, what is the moral thing to do? And we can talk about data. We can talk about statistics. We can talk till the cows come home. But what is the moral thing to do? And I would ask everyone to reflect on that, because what kind of nation are we? Do we, in fact, value and support our children? Do we, in fact, value and support our elders, fountains of wisdom and knowledge? Or are we, in fact, just so willing to cut people off and not bat an eye and show no compassion? That's all I have to say, and I wish all of you the best.
Thanks a lot, Michael, for that. We have another call from Santa Fe. Barbara is on the phone with us. Hi, Barbara.
Hello, and thank you for taking my call. My question has to do really with the flip side aspect of this whole issue, and that is, we keep talking about changes in coverage, availability in coverage, and the Affordable Care Act has made coverage available, or an insurance mechanism that has given access to care. But if we change this formula in ways that reduces money flowing into the system, we will really be cutting jobs. And those jobs will impact not just people getting health care, but will impact our entire communities. And I really would like to see the economic impact of the changes in the system, what we need to do to improve it, what we need to protect the system from, being part of this discussion. Thank you again.
Thanks, Barbara. What about the jobs question? This is a big deal. I think we mentioned earlier that healthcare sector, what is it, the second biggest driver after oil and gas of the economy. So have there been any studies of this, any numbers that we can say could be impacted by changes?
This is Barbara. The Commonwealth came out with a study, and the most conservative for New Mexico job projection is we would lose 13,700 jobs. There are higher projections over the next 10 years, and that would be a 30,000 in the worst-case scenarios, that we 30,000 jobs that would be lost.
Jobs like in hospitals and clinics and...
Yeah, and then you're going to have some fallout to other... As those jobs go away, then there'll be other jobs that will be lost in the community as well.
I think it's important to realize that there's no such thing as a perpetual motion machine. If you have an economy that's fueled off government-funded healthcare spending, then that snowball is eventually going to dry up. We can't just keep having more money because this is a government-funded industry and we need to fund it because it's a government-funded industry. When we take away the fact that we're looking at healthcare as a healthcare issue, then we lose sight of the point here. The point of any healthcare legislation should be to make New Mexicans healthier. And when we're focusing on the fact that, well, we need to fund it just because it's a government-funded industry, that's not acceptable. We need to make sure that those people have jobs outside of the government, because if you're paying taxes into the government only so that you can pay taxes into the government in the next fiscal tax year, then that's not a sustainable economy, and that's going to dry up.
But these are jobs, this is Helen, these are jobs that are outside of government. These are jobs in the healthcare industry. They're doctors, they're nurses, they're physical therapists, occupational therapists, all kinds of jobs that are private sector jobs that are funded and that serve the whole community, not just the Medicaid population. And Health Action New Mexico, several years ago, we had a postcard as Medicaid is an economic engine, and it was a photo of a train and an engine, and we had the statistics, and they're old statistics now. I know there are updated ones. Barbara just gave us some. But these are private sector jobs. And, you know, when you look at the first world countries all over the world, we are unique in not having government-funded health care for everybody. We're really unique, and it works well in those countries.
We got a lot of calls to get to, and let's start with Marcia from Taos. Marcia, you're on the line.
Okay. Well, I have two concerns. I am a hardworking adult. I've worked my whole adult life. I'm 64 years old. I work 40 to 50 hours a week, and my employer does not provide health insurance. I don't get paid a lot, and it's burdensome for me to pay what I do. And I'm, number one, I'm very concerned about the pre-existing condition situation. I've heard that it's not being addressed in the new revised health plan that they're proposing today. And I'm also concerned about, you know, the Republicans all saying that everybody can get their health insurance through their employers. Well, that's just plainly not true. There's a lot of people who are employed and are not getting health insurance. So that's my comment.
Thank you, Marcia. Let's go to another call. Howard on the line from Albuquerque.
Yeah, I would like to have the Republican gentleman actually specifically state if Medicaid is cut, which is realistically what's happening. He can kind of try to say it isn't being cut, but it is definitely being cut. I would like to hear him explain specifically how all those people who are going to lose health insurance are actually going to get health insurance outside of a government system. Not some gobbledygook trickle-down BS, but some very specific facts that he can work with, say, history. Has this ever happened before? So please.
Yeah, you're right in that I am going to argue that this is not a cut. We have a 26% increase in spending compared to 2016 levels. So when we're looking at the amount of money going into this program, when we're looking at the amount of services that are going to be able to come out of this program, that number is $466 billion, with a B, billion dollars in 2026, which is 26% more than it was last year. So if you are happy with the amount of service that you got last year, then you're going to be happy with the amount of service that you're going to get in 2026 because it's a more funded program.
But if you cap Medicaid spending and or block grant it to the states, we already can't pay our share. I mean, I still don't understand the math.
Explain to me your question. We have a system where we're paying more money, where the Senate bill is going to increase funding for Medicaid.
The Senate bill is going to increase funding for Medicaid and cap it at the same time, or turn it into a block grant. How do you turn a block? How can a block grant be an increase because healthcare costs are rising over time?
Well, the point of a block grant is that we're allowing the states to make those fiscal decisions. We're saying here is your lump sum of money, and you can spend it as you will. That's the same thing that happens with so many other government programs, and it works exceptionally well. The point here is to make the authority figure, the authority figure that you have to keep accountable in government, closer to you. If it's our state representatives that are deciding how to spend this money, then that's a constituency of 29,000 people as opposed to 2 million people potentially. So the accountability gets closer to the patients.
Maybe we should just really quickly explain what the system is now and how it works, so our comparisons make sense. I mean, basically, can any of you tell us briefly our complicated Medicaid situation that we're in New Mexico?
Well, as I said earlier, this is Ellen, that it's an entitlement program. So if you qualify medically, unless you're on SSI, which is for low-income individuals, and this year your income is $735 a month, and you get a Medicaid card with your Supplemental Security Income check. And we have many, many clients in my office. That is their entire income. We have so many people in our community and in our state living on $735 a month, seniors and people with disabilities. For a population aside from that, if you're in long-term care, you have a chronic illness, and you would qualify for nursing home care, but you can stay in the community because you have some supports or you're in an assisted living facility, you can have a higher level of income. Your assets cannot exceed $2,000 plus a house and a car, and you can have a $1,500 burial account. But so you have to virtually spend down all your assets, but you can be higher income and get Medicaid for your long-term chronic illness, and be in a nursing home, be in an assisted living, or be in your home.
We have a lot of calls to get to and not much time to get to them, so let's do our best here. Let's start with Ethan from Albuquerque. Hi, Ethan. What's on your mind?
Hi, good morning. I had a question about this this issue you're talking about right now, this transition to a block grant or a per capita cap. I mean, I have family members with terminal illnesses who consume services in excess of any cap I've seen proposed. For example, if my family members consume services, medical services at a rate of like $75,000 a year and the cap is $50,000 a year, we would be facing out-of-pocket costs of $25,000. I'm curious if the Republican Party of New Mexico could address how that's not a cut in the services we would receive, and then also how we are supposed to cover that. I mean, that would be an out-of-pocket cost, or, I mean, I to the extent they're suggesting that we're supposed to turn and wait for the state to cover it, I guess I'd like to them to address how the state in its current budget situation is going to be able to cover those types of costs for all types of different New Mexicans.
Ethan, that's a good point, and I'll turn that over to you, James. I mean, the current bills that we've seen do give a lot of power over to the states. So what is the plan? How do you answer James? I mean, Ethan's question.
I'm not at all intimidated by giving more power to the states when we have, like I said, when we have that accountability at a local level. It's something that you're going to be able to affect change more quickly, rather than the federal government being the end-all be-all deciding where those spending decisions are made. Now, it sounds like in your situation you're talking about, and maybe I misunderstood the question and tell me if I did, but it sounds like you're talking about essential health benefits. And in the last Senate bill, insurers are still not allowed to set annual and lifetime limits on how much they're going to reimburse individuals for essential health benefits. I know that was a story that got spun around for a while.
Wait, but the states would have waivers. We could do that, and we're facing a budget crisis, so the legislators here would have an incentive to cut, to seek a waiver, don't you think?
I disagree, because, you know, again, this is local accountability. You have to go home to your town halls and you have to go home to your diners, and the those that are making budget decisions are going to be much more likely to hear that because this is a real life story to them as opposed to someone that sent them a piece of mail from a faraway state. So the fact that we're at a local level, we shrink that decision making power to the states, increases that accountability, and it makes it easier to affect that change that you're talking about.
Gene, what would that mean for older people in terms of your research at the AARP?
Well, I think that, you know, as we've been talking about, there's a couple of things in the proposal. One is the proposed says we're going to cut back some of the share of taxes going for Medicare. So the potential is your Medicare trust fund is going to be reduced. There may be a loss in benefits and coverage under Medicaid, Medicare. These changes in the private insurance sector, which includes the age rating, the reduced coverage for pre-existing health conditions, some of the protections for individual employer coverage, while on the concept we want more private insurance coverage, these are actually going to make it harder for them. So we think especially the people 50 to 64, that population group is going to be the most affected by this. And they're going to see higher premiums. They're going to see less options. Medicaid, if it is capped, the issue is there'll be reductions in maybe eligibility, reductions in benefits. And so the options for the 50 to 64 population are going to be greatly reduced. And that's where I think one of the biggest impacts will be.
Well, unfortunately, that's all the time we had. I wish we had a whole nother hour to keep talking about this. But we will keep an eye out for the bill that's supposed to be announced in the Senate today and follow up on this story. If you missed part of this program or want to hear it again, you can find it and past episodes on our website, KUNM.org. We're also podcasting the show on iTunes. Thanks to all our guests today, Gene Varela, director of the New Mexico chapter of the AARP, Ellen Leitzer, executive director of the Senior Citizens Law Office, Barbara Weber, executive director of Health Action New Mexico, and James Clark, political strategist for the Republican Party of New Mexico. Thanks to all of you for being here. Marino Spencer engineered the program today. Rashad Mahmood screened your calls. Elaine Baumgartel is our executive producer. KUNM's Public Health New Mexico project is funded by the W.K. Kellogg Foundation and the McCune Charitable Foundation. Find out more online at publichealthnm.org. I'm Ed Williams. Thanks for listening.